Welcome to the Sports Zone on WHRU LP 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. I'm Anthony Collada, and we've got a packed show for you guys this week with a whole bunch of trade information. We've got MLB trade deadline. We've got NFL training camp starting, so we're going to jump right into it. And like our previous shows, we've started with kind of a best moment in sports over the week. Well, instead of this moment, we're going to take a minute to appreciate Bill Russell, who passed away this past weekend at the age of 88. And let me just run through just some of the numbers of his remarkable career. In 13 seasons, he won 11 NBA championships. He was a two-time NCAA champion. He won 5 NBA MVPs. He was a 12-time All-Star. He won the NBA Lifetime Achievement Award. He was even granted the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And with all that, obviously, he's also in the NBA Hall of Fame. And on top of that, he also, after his playing career, he moved into coaching, and he actually became the first African-American head coach in NBA history and went on to win 2 more championships as a coach of the Celtics. And it's just, when you look at all of those things when it comes to Bill Russell, you can wire it down to one single word, and that is winner. Bill Russell was a winner because, oh, and I forgot, I mentioned he also was an Olympic gold medalist. So all this man did was win, and especially as a man in his position, fighting through one of the toughest parts of the civil rights movement, standing up for what he believed in, and really just creating the path for everyone that we have seen over the last 30 years in the NBA. I mean, when you look at the impact that he's had, just take a look at Twitter over the last weekend and see how many athletes, LeBron James, Jason Tatum, DeMar DeRozan, and those are just a few that have appreciated the greatness and the impact that Bill Russell had on not only their careers, but on just the overall game of basketball. And when you look at it, he's done it all. So shame, you know, that life has to come to an end, unfortunately. But at 88 years old, he's an all-time winner in both on the court, in life. That is one life to have lived for Bill Russell. And unfortunately for myself, I am way too young to have ever been able to witness Bill Russell, but I guess through my eyes, I can still see Bill Russell being able to see all of the NBA players that are now playing because of him. So a huge shout out to Bill Russell for everything that he did, and may he rest in peace up in heaven forever. So with that, finally moved into the month of August. That means the Huntley High School football season. We are finally in the right month. It is coming up. It starts with the red white scrimmage where, you know, part of the team faces the other part of the team. It's going to be open to all the fans. That is going to be on August 19th. So that's going to be the first time that you can see this new Huntley High School football team in action in 2022. That is August 19th when they'll be scrimmaging each other. And then just 1 week later is when the official season kicks off with the Raiders visiting Crystal Lake Central on August 26th. And then the moment we've all been waiting for, especially myself, the home debut. We're back on the radio broadcast against McHenry on September 2nd. So football season is, it's upon us now. We're in the right month, and there's no more. We're finally getting down to it. We don't have to wait as long, and it's coming. It's going to be a good season, and I'm really excited to be on the call for all of the home games. And as we transition into baseball now, the Chicago Cubs, who have continued to struggle, they did win their little mini two-game series against the Pittsburgh Pirates, both low-scoring defensive games, not a whole lot of offensive output. But, you know, they came away with 2 wins. something to build on. And then they traveled out to San Francisco over the weekend, and they dropped 3 of 4. Sunday was not a pretty game. They were rung up, I think, 11 or 12 times by Carlos Rodon. And it's very possible that Sunday was the last day that a lot of fans are going to see several of these Cubs players. Most notably, Wilson Contreras. You know, he had his moment at Wrigley when it was his last game, his last at-bats. He had the interviews. He was emotional. He got the crowd, you know, cheering for him and everything. And now, Sunday, you saw the tears again in the dugout afterwards, you know, after the game was over. So all signs continue to point towards Wilson Contreras eventually being on the move. Now, where he goes, I'm not really sure. I've seen the Mets being thrown out there. The Cleveland Guardians need a catcher. So there are some teams out there that are still looking for catchers. And we could even possibly see the Cubs package several of their players. I mean, they've still got Ian Happ, David Robertson, or just the next two biggest names. They got Michael Givens in the bullpen. So there are still several names on this Cubs roster that most people are expecting to be gone by the deadline. And I'm not sure what's going to happen. It's going to be a tough moment as a Cubs fan for me to see some of these players. I mean, Wilson Contreras has been the heart and soul of this team. Yeah, you could say Rizzo was like the captain, but like Wilson Contreras was the heart. He brought that energy every single day. And even this year, he really has become a mentor for these young players, and especially Christopher Morel, who just, he's been that veteran leadership, and it's going to be hard to part with such a valuable player to not only on the field, but in the clubhouse. So we'll see what the Cubs do with the players that they have now, because they've already been making moves. Scott Efros was traded over the weekend to the Yankees for a pitcher by the name of Hayden Wesneski. Wesneski is 24 years old. He was the number 7 prospect in the Yankees system. In 19 starts in AAA, Wesneski went 6-7 with a 3.51 ERA. And I was able to look up some of his highlights, and the one thing that really stuck out to me was how nasty his slider is. Now, when you hear nasty slider, a lot of people tend to think, oh, well, yeah, it moves a lot, but can he control it? And that is always the biggest thing with sliders, is because they can get so much break that you need to make sure that you can control it. And, you know, Wesneski is going to be a solid starter in AAA. He's got some decent control over that slider. You know, it could go away here and there, but that's any pitcher. So they've got an arm in AAA now that is going to be able to compete for a starting rotation spot next year, if not by the end of this year, depending on, you know, what happens to the arms right now in the rotation. So Wesneski, it's an intriguing prospect for the Cubs to get in an Efros deal. And I also think that it worked out perfectly for the Yankees as well. I mean, Efros is under team control on a very team-friendly contract for the next 5 seasons. So he's going to be able to hold down that middle relief, left-handed reliever spot in that Yankees bullpen for years to come as they continue to make their pushes for World Series, as we've seen over the past couple of years and as they're going to continue to do for the years to come. And Efros was not the only bullpen arm traded from the Cubs over the weekend, as right-hander Chris Martin was sent to the Dodgers for second baseman Zach McKinstry. Now, this is a much lower end kind of scaled deal for the Cubs, especially because they are pretty loaded in the middle infield as you go down the farm system. So Chris Martin, he was here on a 1-year deal in Chicago. He pitched very well. I mean, I think he only had a couple of appearances throughout the entire first half of the season that really went awry for him. So good on the Cubs to be able to take the value in him and at least get something back in return, because let's be honest, you sign a reliever for 1 year in a rebuild season. The Cubs aren't going to be in a position to win any World Series or even get into the playoffs next year. So Chris Martin on a 1 year deal is not going to be back here next year anyways. So get rid of him, get something at least back. And that's what the Cubs did. So, you know, the trades have started for the Cubs. Now we'll see what happens with the likes of Contreras, Ian Happ, David Roberts, and Michael Givens. So we'll just see what's coming up for the Cubs. And in terms of their schedule, they're off on Monday, and then they travel to St. Louis for a 3-game series with the Cardinals. I think that's going to be a tough series for the Cubs, especially after the deadline, and the roster is going to look probably a little bit different. The Cardinals are in a win now kind of position. They're leading the division. They're at the top. So they're looking to add at the deadline, and they've already got dangerous bats like Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado. There's talks. I don't know if it's going to happen, but they're very interested in Juan Soto. You add those bats into that lineup. So Cardinals, they've got a good lineup. Their rotation's here and there. It's a little spotty, but I could see this being a series sweep for the Cardinals against the Cubs. But, hey, anything can happen. And for the Cubs, it's all about, you know, finding those pieces for the next years. And then, you know, after the Cardinals series, they'll come home for a 6-game homestand with the Marlins and the Nationals. So two lower-end teams. We'll just see what happens with the Cubs for the rest of the season. I mean, everyone knew what it was coming into the season, and it's even more clear now. So Cubs just got to look to shine light on some bright spots to be able to take into next year. And then we flip over to the South side with the White Sox. Last week, they split their 2-game mini series with the Rockies in Colorado, and then came home and took 2 of 3 versus Oakland. And that Oakland series was very important for the White Sox. And even splitting in Colorado was important for them, because those were kind of the last two big series on their schedule that it's like, if the White Sox want to be a legitimate contender, these are the games, these are the teams that they need to make sure that they handle, because now their schedule, it starts to get a little easier. They've got the Royals, the Rangers. They got the Royals a couple of times, the Tigers. So their schedule is now kind of getting down to some of the easier parts of it right at the right time, right down the home stretch. So it's all going to be a matter of if the White Sox can get and stay healthy and just, you know, continue to battle and put up wins. And it's going to be a little tougher for them if their their shortstop Tim Anderson is in fact suspended 3 games. He made contact with an umpire the other day, and you know, in MLB that is an absolute no-no. So Anderson made contact with the umpire. He is going to appeal the suspension, so I'm thinking maybe it'll get cut down to 2, maybe 1 game. But expect Tim Anderson to serve some type of suspension. Luckily, it's a baseball suspension where he'll sit out a day, 2, maybe 3, come back, and he's right back in the lineup. It's not like in football, oh, you're suspended a whole week. So, you know, 3 games, it's not the end of the world. It's going to give him a little bit of extra rest maybe for the playoff run. But, you know, they're getting down to the stretch run of it here. They need all their players on the field as much as they can. So, and this isn't the first time that Tim Anderson has been in the hot seat for being suspended. So those are the little things that are going to make this White Sox team either a division winner and a playoff contender, or a first round exit in the playoffs, or even miss out on the playoffs. So it's the little things. You know, everyone knows that they've got the talent, and if they can get healthy and bring everyone back for the stretch run, they're going to be there. It's just going to be the little mental things and some of these coaching errors that we've seen that might be the difference for them. So I think I would expect them to be pretty active at this trade deadline. When you look at their roster, a reliever and a left-handed bat are definitely their biggest needs. Lory Garcia cannot continue to be run out there for the White Sox. He's just not as much of a winning player that the White Sox need right now. So look for them to try to add at least a bat and a reliever by the trade deadline. And like I mentioned, so their upcoming schedule, they got the Royals, they got the Rangers, and then they take a day off, and then they face Kansas City again in a doubleheader on August 9th. So Royals, Rangers, very beatable teams. They're towards the bottom of their divisions. The Royals just sold off their best player, Benintendi. So there's not a whole lot on either of those teams. So those are the games that the White Sox really need to take advantage of if they want to be the legitimate team that everyone thought they were going to be coming into the season. So we'll see what happens with them. I'm thinking it's just going to be the little things that they got to clean up. And we're going to take a short break for station identification. You are listening to the Sports Zone on WHRU-LP 101.5 FM on Huntley Community Radio. And as we continue, now we switch over to the Bears. And first week of training camps under the belt. I got those football jitters. It's back. Let's go. So as we look to see kind of who are these players that have really stood out and made a difference in this first week of training camp. And right off the bat, you get the 2 second-round rookies, Kyler Gordon, the cornerback, and Jaquan Brisker, their safety. These two guys have been balling out in camp, picking off passes, you know, playing good coverage. They're right around the ball. And that is exactly what you want to see out of your top two draft picks out of this class. Yes, they're second rounders, but there's a reason that Ryan Poles didn't reach for an offensive player in the second round. Because when you can find two guys like that, that are going to solidify your secondary, you add that to third year Jalen Johnson, and you've got a very young secondary that, all things go well, they develop. Now you've got three solid starters for the next 10, 15 years in the defensive backfield. So these two picks were, I mean, obviously got to wait to see the pads come on and start getting into some live action, but first week, good things out of these two rookies. And then probably the most important person, Justin Fields, has in fact looked very good at camp. Deep ball looks great. We've known since his Ohio State days that Justin Fields can throw the deep ball and be very accurate with it. And now that we are seeing him into a new offense, we're seeing much more play action out of him, getting him moving his feet, getting him on the run. And he's had a good first week. You know, obviously some ups and downs here, but something that really stood out to me was he started off a practice last week relatively rough. He threw a couple of interceptions picked off by our second round rookies. But he came back end of practice 7-on-7. He finished 10-of-10, had a couple of touchdown passes in there. And that's exactly what you want to see out of your second year quarterback who really struggled last year. Get him into a new offense, get him into a right mindset kind of thing. We'll see what happens now. And he's got that chemistry with Darnell Mooney, and that's continued to show in this first week of training camp. And I think we saw Mooney take that big step last year as a second year receiver. And with another year under his belt with Justin Fields, I think the sky's the limit. I mean, he went over 1,000 yards last year. We'll see what happens this year, but that connection has shown up early and often in training camp so far. And another receiver that has looked very good is the third round rookie, Velus Jones Jr. And I just want to say one thing. That man is fast. That 4.3 speed is legit. I don't know who the corner was, but it was a practice. And Velus Jones just took off and left him 8 yards behind him. And Justin Fields' perfect throw was a touchdown. So that 4.3 speed is going to be a playmaker. And it's, I think Velus Jones is going to bring something to the offense that we haven't seen since the likes of Tariq Cohen before he got hurt, the kind of gadget player, speed guy, get the ball in his hands, get him in open field and let him run. And then the last player who's impressed so far that I think is might be the most important is Cole Kmet. There's been a lot of talks over the last couple of years now that Cole Kmet's just not the tight end that he was supposed to be coming out in the second round. But I didn't think the offense was right for him. He's running 5-yard hook routes, turning around. There's a linebacker sitting right next to him when he comes off the line. So obviously he's not going to get targeted very often. He's going to be covered when he is. So he's going to be having to make contested catches all the time. Well, this first week in training camp, we've seen some wheel routes. We've seen some up the seam routes with Kmet. And he's been hauling it in. He's been playing well. We already know how mean he is blocking. So he's going to factor in on the running game. And if he can become that security blanket for Fields in the tight end position, and then you add these couple receivers, if they, you know, they start, this offense might not be as bad as everyone is saying that they are going to be. Now, transition away a little bit, though, injuries in only the first week, they are kind of starting to add up. Lucas Patrick, who the Bears brought over from the Green Bay Packers to play center, he now needs surgery for a broken thumb. They're hoping that he is going to be ready by week one, but now you've missed all of training camp. You've missed all of the preseason. So with a new center, new quarterback, you got to get that continuity down. If he's going to miss a bunch of time, you know, obviously they're going to be talking to each other in meetings and whatnot, but it's not going to be the same. So, you know, it's a tough blow. Now you find your backup offensive lineman and hope once Patrick is ready, he slots right back in. Another offensive lineman who there's a lot going on with Tevin Jenkins right now. David Kaplan, a Chicago reporter, says that it's not a serious injury, and that Eberflus is saying that he's working through something, but Kaplan's saying that there's just some disconnect with Jenkins and the offensive line coach. There's been some rumors about his maturity. I don't know if that's because he expected to come into this season with an automatic starting role, which I don't know why he would have thought that. He didn't prove anything last year, but he hasn't practiced all week in training camp. And all of a sudden now there are trade rumors that the Bears are going to trade Tevin Jenkins, who they traded up for in the second round just last year to get. So that's going to be a hard cut to, you know, a hard trade to have to make. But, you know, if he's just not the player and he's not there, might as well try to get something, I guess, for him. You know, so, and now transition away from training camp and we hit the big MLB trade deadline news. And it's been a lot, and there's still a couple of days from right now when I'm recording this until the deadline. And just a couple of these moves: Andrew Benintendi to the Yankees for some prospects. Tyler Naquin went to the Mets from Cincinnati. Cincinnati stayed busy trading Luis Castillo, probably the top starting pitcher on the market, to the Seattle Mariners. On Monday, some big moves were made. Josh Hader, the Milwaukee closer, who is arguably one of the best left-handed pitchers in all of baseball, was traded to San Diego for a young closer, Taylor Rogers, and some more prospects. Outfielder for the Orioles, Trey Mancini, got traded to Houston. And then the Yankees continued to make some moves, acquiring both starting pitcher Frankie Montas and relief pitcher Lou Trevino from the Oakland Athletics. So the Yankees, they get their outfielder, they get a starter, and they get a reliever. So, you know, they're going all in. Houston, they've got a very solid team. They add to it with an outfielder, DH, first base kind of guy. So I think those are your two headliners right now in the American League. You jump over to the National League, I think it's going to be the Dodgers and maybe the Mets. So I think those are your top four teams right now, barring any other big moves. I mean, here, there's still some names out there. You know, we mentioned it. Contreras, Happ, Juan Soto, Noah Syndergaard is probably now the top starting pitcher on the market. And then real quickly, as we hit the NFL news, Deshaun Watson was suspended just 6 games for violating the NFL's conduct policy. He had 24 civil lawsuits from various massage therapists, but ultimately they were all settled and the NFL only tagged him with 6 games. There's a lot of debate about whether that's right. I mean, he was never criminally charged, so I don't know. 6 games for that when you give Calvin Ridley a year for betting don't seem right to me. But his debut will come week 7 against the Ravens. Debo Samuel got paid. He got 3 years, $71.5 million with $58 million guaranteed. So they got DK Metcalf signed with the Seahawks. So it was just waiting for the other shoe to drop with Samuel. He's going to be a big part of their offense again, just like he was last year. And any of you fantasy managers out there, he's locked into the lineup now. So get him on your team. He's going to be another stud this year. And as we wrap it up with our sports fact, training camp coming back got me in the mood for football. Something I found crazy when I saw this. It takes 3,000 cows to supply the NFL with enough leather for a year's supply of football, according to Bleacher Report. I just think that's crazy. Like, that's a lot of cows. Just think about it. I mean, I guess we're already eating our steaks and whatnot, so I guess the leather's got to go somewhere. But 3,000 cows for a year's worth of footballs, that is crazy. Can't imagine how much the NFL's forking over to these farmers and mass production companies and whatnot. So just something crazy to think about as we wrap up this episode. And, you know, we'll be back next week with another one and hopefully some more trade deadline news, some more training camp news. But it was a busy week this week, and I'd expect it only to get more busy as the MLB playoffs start to roll around. So we'll be back next week with the Sports Zone.